3, 2, 1, let go. Level up, 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 level up.
Hello, welcome to Level Up with Dani. I'm your host, Dani Stockham. Today is January 29th. It's the last Thursday of the first month of this new year, 2026. And what a year it's been already. Am I right? Yes, I'm right. I just signed in to the radio station and filled out all my paperwork, and I wrote January 28th on every single page. So I'll have to go back and fix all that, but it's actually the 29th, and here I am. I am doing a show today on PTSD. It's a very important topic, and it shows up in so many lives. So I wanted to talk a little bit about this because I was reminded about PTSD in a very visual way in the last few days. So I was like, hey, I should probably do a show on that. I'm going to be referencing a few books. One of them is called Complex PTSD. It's by Pete Walker. It's a very good book if you want to read something about complex PTSD, which I'll explain to you later. And another book, one of the first books I read that mentioned the type of PTSD that I personally suffer from, is a book called The Body Keeps the Score. And that's by Bessel van der Kolk. And I actually have the audio version of the book, so I can go back and listen to chapters if I need a refresher. But let's talk about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. It's a mental health condition that can develop after experiencing or witnessing trauma, whether that's combat trauma, sexual assault, child abuse, medical trauma, accidents, first responder work, domestic violence, or chronic neglect. I think we all know someone who suffers from PTSD. You might suffer yourself. So hopefully through this show, you're going to find out about some tools and what PTSD really is, and maybe some resources that'll help you deal with your personal PTSD suffering. I think one of the most important things about PTSD is to know that this is not a weakness. It's actually your brain and your nervous system doing their best work to survive something that is overwhelming. I have some PTSD from my life and the experiences in my life, and those manifest themselves in a few different ways. The bulk of my sexual abuse in my home took place in the state of Arizona, in the city of Tucson. And as a result of that, I have a lot of feelings about Tucson, Arizona. And when my daughter went to college there, I was focusing on the college part and my experiences in college, which were, for the most part, positive. But once she stopped going to college and we had purchased a house in Arizona, I was having all these physical symptoms every time we went to Arizona. And it was like, what is wrong with me? Am I allergic to Arizona? Like, what's happening in my body that I'm having all these problems every time we go? And my husband adores Arizona, so we were going like once a month. And when I finally thought to myself, this could be PTSD, I had a conversation with my husband and just kind of said, you know, I have these feelings about Arizona because of what happened to me in this state. And I really need to kind of, I mean, not forgive myself because I didn't do anything. I was a victim. But I need to contextualize my victimization and the role that it's playing in my current life, which is no role at all. But my body and its efficient job of keeping the score was still having a reaction to Arizona. So I've really been working on that, and I feel like even just saying it out loud and acknowledging that places can hold memories, and those memories if they're not good memories, if they're bad memories, can cause you to experience a PTSD situation when you're in those places. And I have a similar situation in San Diego, California, because two of my three sisters live there, and there's been a massive falling out in my family, and I don't talk to those sisters anymore. And my other daughter lives there now. So I was having all these feelings about going to San Diego because of what it represented for me. And not so much in a PTSD way, but more like the memories that were created there that were good memories have now all been tainted by the current situation in my family. And again, I needed to not allow those to have power over me. And that's one of the things about PTSD, is we don't know how to deal with the actual post-traumatic stress disorder, and we haven't had therapy, or we aren't recognizing it as that, and so it shows up in all these different ways in our lives. So I wanted to do a brief history of PTSD, which I found this to be just so, so interesting. It wasn't always called PTSD. In the Civil War, they called it a soldier's heart. They thought it was a heart condition because after combat, men had chest pains and panic and nightmares, so they called it soldier's heart. In World War I, we called it shell shock. It was assumed to be a physical brain damage from explosions, and it kind of rattled their brains, so to speak, so they weren't able to be productive members of society once they came back from World War I. In World War II in Korea, they called it combat fatigue. They thought it was a temporary kind of exhaustion. And mostly soldiers were sent right back into battle, like, you got to get over this combat fatigue, get back to work. The Vietnam War really changed things because these veterans returned home deeply changed, and they were ignored. And this led to advocacy and finally the recognition of what we now know today as PTSD. In 1980, PTSD was formally recognized in the DSM-3, which is the Psychiatric Diagnostic Manual. And that's when it started to have a name and different categories and treatments. So essentially, PTSD has always existed. Society just kept renaming it and blaming sufferers. The first type of PTSD is acute PTSD. The symptoms last less than 3 months. It often follows a single traumatic event, and many people recover with early support. So that single traumatic event could be, you know, witnessing a fatal car accident, a sexual assault. Sometimes it's a medical thing that you witness, whether that's someone you're visiting in the hospital has a seizure and you start having some PTSD because of that. So it's acute, but usually if you have an intervention and you talk to someone about it, you can usually recover. So that's a single traumatic event. The next type of PTSD is chronic, where the symptoms last longer than 3 months, and it can persist for years without treatment. And I think that's probably the most common type of PTSD, is like a chronic PTSD that you just have these symptoms and it can go on for years if you don't treat it. Now, the other type of PTSD, which I spoke about at the top of the show, complex PTSD, is not always formally diagnosed, but it's widely recognized. This results from long-term repeated trauma. It's common in childhood abuse or neglect, domestic violence, human trafficking. And the symptoms include emotional dysregulation, shame and self-doubt, difficulty trusting others, and identity issues. And one of the ways that people describe complex PTSD, it says nothing, quote unquote, happened to me one time. It was my entire life was abuse, neglect, violence, whatever it was. So it wasn't recognized as a onset of symptoms. It was their whole life. So they never said, oh, I have PTSD from my life. That's kind of what makes it a little tricky to talk about. And the fourth kind of PTSD is delayed onset. This is where symptoms appear months or years later. It's common in veterans, first responders, and caregivers. And I think we all know someone, we have friends who are taking care of their parents, and their parents are declining, and a lot of the Alzheimer's, dementia, those type of illnesses that our parents are suffering from, and their entire personalities change, and they're violent or, say terrible things to you, verbally abusive. And once they pass, that's when caregivers find that they have some PTSD from this situation. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some personal PTSD that I have in addition to the abuse of my childhood. On October 9th in 2017, there was a wildfire here in Santa Rosa, California, and it decimated neighborhood after neighborhood after neighborhood. The fire started in the middle of the night, and it was actually my daughter's 15th birthday. And my husband was not home at the time, so it was me and my two daughters and our two dogs and our cat trying to escape the neighborhood as the houses around us burned down. Now, the PTSD that I suffer from that is the memories and the visceral feeling that I have when I think about that night. My daughter tried to get her cat to get in the car with us, and Thomas scratched her and jumped out of her arms. And, you know, my daughter's, it's her birthday, so she's 15, and I can see her screaming out the front door, run, Thomas, run, run, Thomas, run, because the fire was at the end of our driveway and he ran off. So I'll never forget that. And then when we finally got out of the garage and got in the car and we had a gate on our property, and I said to my daughters, just close your eyes because whether the gate opens or not, we're going through it, and just flooring the car to go through the gate as the flames were at the bottom of the driveway. That is an actual feeling that I have in my body, what that felt like. And my daughter just sobbing, what about Thomas? What about Thomas? And me trying to encourage her, Thomas is the smartest cat we know. Thomas is going to be okay. And, you know, just trying to make her not focus on that, even though inside I was dying. And Thomas did survive. He was discovered 45 days after the fire, less than a half a mile from our house. He survived in a rain culvert that ran between two neighborhoods. So he is the smartest cat we know. Now, my older daughter has a lot of PTSD from the fire. She was away at college, and there was a fire alarm in her dorm room, and she completely lost it, had an extreme mental breakdown. She was under the desk in her room. She couldn't leave. She couldn't evacuate if it was a real fire or not. She didn't know. She was frozen. Thank God it wasn't a fire, but that's something that anytime she hears an alarm, there's a physical reaction that freezes her. She's unable to have good decision making. She's unable to hear any calming words. She catastrophizes the situation. And we were in a restaurant this last weekend, and there was a fire alarm, and we were in, the people in the restaurant said, you know, don't worry, there's not really a fire. But for my daughter, it was a big issue, coupled with the fact that there was a blinking fire alarm that kept going off, and she also has a seizure disorder, which is controlled by medication, so she won't have a seizure because of the flashing light, but she will get the migraine. So it was just terrible, and I could just see that the triggers of the fire alarm took her right back to that day. And she's had lots of therapy, and she's done lots of PTSD treatments, but I just don't know if that's ever really going to go away. That's a life-altering event. So here's some of the things that you experience. You keep re-experiencing the event. You have flashbacks, nightmares, intrusive thoughts. And sometimes these intrusive thoughts can really take over your entire life to the point that you're crippled and you start avoiding people, places, conversations. You numb yourself emotionally. Sometimes you're hyper-aroused. You're real irritable. You have hypervigilance. You know, are the doors locked? You know, what's that smell? Is that natural gas? Is there going to be an explosion? You have sleep disturbance because you keep reliving events. You're having nightmares. You have a very itchy startle response. I have this. I mean, I will know that people are around me and they'll walk in the room that I'm in and I'll still jump out of my skin. And it's kind of that, and I know that's from my childhood, like, you know, you had to be hyper aware because you just never knew when your predator was going to sneak up on you. And I still have that startle response. You also can have negative moods and cognition. You feel guilt. You feel shame. You describe yourself as broken. You lose interest in things that you once cared about. You feel hopeless. There's just an overwhelming feeling of hopelessness. Now, there's lots of ways to treat PTSD. And there's lots of ways that they used to treat PTSD that didn't work. In the old days, they used to just sedate you and institutionalize you. Or they would say, just tough it out. Just get over it. You're fine. This doesn't affect you. The fire's over. Everyone rebuilt their houses. Your cat was fine. You know, just get over it. A lot of people turn to alcohol and drugs to self-medicate so they don't have to feel those feelings. They used to use electroconvulsive therapy, ECT therapy, with trauma-informed care, just as a way to kind of blank out your mind so that you don't have the intrusive thoughts, you don't have the flashbacks. There was talk therapy, but it was very minimal because there was little understanding of this trauma memory and how it works. So many people were traumatized by treatment itself. And that's something that's really interesting. In our vernacular today, we say things like, oh, that's such a trauma response, or, you know, why don't you deal with your trauma and you might be more successful in your relationships? You know, everyone has trauma. And for someone who has real trauma, the quote-unquote excuse or fashion of saying, oh, that's just your trauma response, can be triggering. Like, oh, do tell what your trauma is. Almost like there's no way you have the kind of trauma that I have. And I got over it. I'm better. I mean, I'm not saying that's healthy, but that does happen. You see both sides of that, especially in today's social media. There's a lot of talk about trauma and trauma responses. Before I get into our modern evidence-based treatments, how they treat PTSD today, I'm going to just do a little bit of radio business because we have a lot to cover and, you know, I don't want to run out of time and I do have a job to do here. So the first thing is, our Cows program promotion announcement, and we're promoting Laura's Living Room this week. Laura's Living Room is a place to be on Fridays from 5 to 7 p.m. on KOWS Community Radio. Come in for eclectic music, interesting schmooze, and a tantalizing array of audio tidbits with Laura Goldman, your KOWS hostess with the mostess. Check it out at KOWS LP Occidental 92.5 in Sonoma County and always streaming on KOWSFM.com. For weekly show updates, you can email livingroomlaura@gmail.com. I've never met Laura, but I do get her emails, and her show sounds really cool. So if you're available Fridays from 5 to 7 p.m., I invite you to tune in. The next is a public service announcement. This is for the Santa Rosa Sunrise Rotary. Opportunity knocks. Will you answer? The Santa Rosa Sunrise Rotary Club welcomes you to join them in making a difference in your community. The Rotary supports a number of local organizations with a focus on assisting those in need. Consider joining and giving back to our community. You can find out about the Santa Rosa Sunrise Rotary Club by just Googling them. Santa Rosa Sunrise Rotary. My last PSA is a current event. It's taking place a few times. The band Dirty Cello is a globe-trotting band that performs blues, rock, and Americana, all fronted by virtuoso cellist and former KOWS host Rebecca Roudman. A classically trained symphony player, Rebecca dropped the straitjacket of classical music years ago and hasn't looked back since. Dirty Cello will thrill you with a set list ranging from Jimi Hendrix to Charlie Daniels to rocking originals. For more information about tickets, visit www.dirtycello.com. So February 7th is our next venue that she'll be performing. The Dirty Cello will be performing at the Cloverdale Performing Center for the Arts. Cloverdale Performing Arts Center on February 7th. On March 7th, she'll be at Hot Monk Tavern in Sebastopol. And on April 24th, she'll be at Fiddletown Community Center in Fiddletown, California, which I didn't even know there was a Fiddletown, California. But the fact that she's a cellist and she's going to Fiddletown, I'm sorry. How are we not in love with that? Okay, let's talk about some modern evidence-based treatments. Trauma-focused psychotherapies is the gold standard. EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. This helps the brain reprocess traumatic memories. It's very effective for single and complex trauma. It's often faster than traditional talk therapy. I personally have done EMDR, and it's very interesting how it works. I don't even understand how it works. I can't even believe that it works, but it works. There's a book on EMDR, and if you're interested, I'd suggest you read it. It's very short, but the way that your brain processes information after you've had an EMDR treatment is shocking. So that's a real positive method of dealing with PTSD that I can speak to. It really does help your brain reprocess traumatic memories. The second treatment is cognitive processing therapy, CPT. It challenges distorted beliefs like it was my fault or I'm broken. There's strong evidence for veterans and survivors that this cognitive processing therapy works. I was in a process group for a long time dealing with some of my stuff, and we used to call it cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, but now they call it cognitive processing therapy. But it's like one of the people that were in my processing group at the time had disordered eating, and she was her disordered eating was in the form of anorexia. And she was very, very tiny, starving herself. And she used to say things like, I'm a pig. I'm such a pig. I can't believe how much I ate for lunch. I'm such a pig. She was on a feeding tube. And the therapist would say, can you talk to me about how you're a pig? I mean, you don't have hooves. You don't have a curly tail. You don't have a pig nose. It's like taking a distorted belief, I'm a pig, making it a real thing. You're not actually a farm animal. And then challenging it so that you can discard it because it doesn't serve you. And this type of therapy also works, but it's hard work and it takes a long time. There's no quick fix. This is a lot of verbal processing. Another form of treatment is prolonged exposure therapy. And I can't think of the name of it. I say it to my daughter all the time. We need to do, it'll come to me. But you safely revisit your memories and the situations that you're avoiding, and it reduces your fear over time. Aversion therapy, that's what I call it, aversion therapy. You put yourself in these situations that you were afraid of, or you put yourself in a situation like, and we trigger a fire alarm, and you stand in that place, and you experience the fire alarm while someone's there talking to you saying, this is not scary. This is just a sound. And if it was a real warning for a real fire, it's letting you know that there's danger for you to leave. If there's not a fire, it's just an irritation. Like you talk yourself through it, this prolonged exposure therapy. So I don't know how that works. That would be really scary if your abuse was physical or sexual. I don't know how you would get prolonged exposure to that. I don't even want to think about that. Oop, take that out of my brain. Another way they treat PTSD is through medication. This is used as a support. It does not cure PTSD. They use SSRIs like sertraline and paroxetine. They use a drug called, let me see if I can pronounce this, Prazosin for nightmares, mood stabilizer, anti-anxiety meds, carefully monitored. And my daughter took mood stabilizers because her highs, when she would have a PTSD flashback or experience, her highs were very high. She was very heightened, and it was hard to get her down. And so that we would use mood stabilizers to kind of stabilize her mood. Now, there's some other somatic and nervous system-based therapy that I personally think is where we're headed. We're heading more away from the medication and more to somatic experiencing. And I should have written down more about that. I'll post something on my social medias because the somatic experience and the way that you experience things somatically is a kind of work that is very much a hot topic in the wellness world. Also breath work, the whole when you're having an anxiety attack because of a PTSD situation and you do, you know, take your breath in for 5, hold for 4, exhale for 3, breathe normally for 2, take one beat and start again, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. That's some breath work. And I know that my daughter, she can spot someone who's having an anxiety attack and she can go over there and kind of say, let's breathe through this. You know, she's very good at that. There's also yoga for trauma. There's neurofeedback, which is like biofeedback, but it's neurofeedback. And there's mindfulness-based stress reduction. All of these ways of system-based therapies just enforce the fact that trauma lives in the body. not just the mind. Your body keeps the score. If you don't deal with your trauma, you will get sick. Your body will force you to deal with it one way or another. And there is some thought about my own personal health and the fact that I have rheumatoid arthritis, which is an autoimmune disease, which is chronic, debilitating joint pain that is progressive. And there is no cure. There's only treatment. And is this my body's response to the trauma that I endured? And my body just turned against me, and now I have rheumatoid arthritis. I mean, I'm not opposed to that line of thinking. Okay, there's also some emerging and cutting-edge treatments. Ketamine-assisted therapy. This is a rapid relief for severe PTSD and depression. It's done in a clinical settings with therapy. Now, my daughter also had this. And let me just say that of all the things that she's done, all the growth that she's had, the inpatient treatment, the outpatient treatment, the process groups, the medication, the breath work, all the things that she's done, the thing that changed her brain the most is ketamine. She had three sessions, and it did the most for her. She was really not doing well. And I think that ketamine-assisted therapy can change your life. And if you're at the end of your rope and you've tried everything, or you don't want to try medication, or you don't have the time on your hands to do 12 years of therapy, this is a way to get relief for severe PTSD and depression. And I highly recommend it, and I can give you a reference to a place in Santa Rosa to go. The second type of cutting-edge treatment is MDMA-assisted therapy. It's currently in advanced FDA trials, particularly promising for treatment-resistant PTSD. So you've tried everything, and now you want to try MDMA, which I think is the street drug commonly known as ecstasy. And it's done, obviously, in a controlled environment with a professional. But I think there's a lot of good evidence that this is something that can help as well. And then there's virtual reality exposure therapy. Now, this is something I find to be so interesting, and it's very useful for combat trauma. You put on those virtual reality, you know, headset, and they take you through a battle or whatever, some type of war situation that you've seen, and you survive it with your therapist right there. So it's like virtual reality exposure therapy, kind of like that thing that I say to my daughter. Not exposure therapy. I already forgot it again. Okay, well, that doesn't matter. Now, here's what healing actually looked like. It doesn't mean that you forgot it, or you're over it, or you're not ever going to be triggered again. It means that you're regaining control. You're feeling safe in your own body. You're living fully with your story, not ruled by it. The more you tell your story, the more you remove the shame of your story, the more you speak your truth, the more you take control of your life. Now, there's a lot of evidence that psychedelics and psychedelic-assisted therapy is working for veterans. And we have an entire population of veterans who are struggling. And there's ongoing research with full or therapeutic doses of psychedelics paired with psychotherapy. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and other research groups are funding studies on MDMA-assisted therapy for PTSD in veterans, focusing on how the drug can help people process trauma alongside psychological support. Clinical trials are recruiting veterans to study psilocybin and MDMA together to see if these compounds can improve PTSD symptoms and the quality of life. early clinical reports and pilot studies in trauma-related disorders note potential reductions in PTSD symptoms and improvements in connected issues like depression and anxiety. But the evidence is preliminary and it's on a small scale. So my husband and I met a veteran at a party that we went to a few months ago, and he was talking about how he microdoses psilocybin every day, and that it has kept him essentially out of a facility, maybe a locked facility. So microdosing refers to taking very small doses of psychedelic substances like LSD or psilocybin regularly. A systematic review on studies of microdosing suggests some users report better mood, better focus, better well-being. But again, it's limited and small studies and self-reporting. There are a few controlled clinical studies and none yet that definitively prove that microdosing improves PTSD symptoms in a therapeutic way. But there are a lot of veterans who are trying this and in a controlled and monitored way. A very small trial found microdosing LSD may improve sleep duration, which is relevant since sleep problems are very common in PTSD. But this doesn't have any evidence about measuring the PTSD symptom change. Most of the research is early, and the reports are usually anecdotal. However, there are some retreats that happen where they report seeking healing or spiritual growth and describe personal benefit, even though these reports are not controlled clinical data. Organizations like Heroic Hearts Project supports veterans exploring psychedelic-assisted healing and help reduce stigma by connecting people with research and community. Many veterans feel traditional treatments failed them, and for that reason, they explore these psychedelics. But the science hasn't caught up yet. Some veterans say they've tried microdosing psychedelics like LSD or psilocybin because it felt helpful for mood, focus, or anxiety, important parts of the PTSD experience. But so far, science studies haven't conclusively shown that microdosing alone cures PTSD. Most evidence is early. But the most promising science today involves psychedelic-assisted therapy, which uses these substances in a medically supervised therapeutic setting, often with preparation and integration work. Early results, especially with MDMA and psilocybin, show they might help people process trauma when combined with psychotherapy. I know that when my daughter did her ketamine, there's this integration work. So they deliver the ketamine to her. She goes into like a ketamine state, and she just starts talking. And they write down every single thing that she says while she's under the ketamine drug. And then the next day or 2 days later, she goes back for what they call integration work, where they read to her what she said. And then they talk about the things that she said. I just find that to be so cool. And this work changed her in every way you can imagine. Now, there's a lot of stigma, especially for males, about traditional mental health care, including talk therapy or medication. So they might be drawn to alternatives that feel more self-exploratory or experiential. Surveys of veterans who have used psychedelics say that they feel more in control of their treatment because this microdosing and these different psilocybin therapies reduce their trauma-related symptoms, and may help them reframe their traumatic memories. So I just wanted to say a few more things about, let me see if I can find my page where I wrote all my notes. Because, you know, I always have a lot of papers. Yeah, so I talked about the fire and what that was. Well, I was asking some people when I was preparing for the show, you know, about a PTSD experience they could speak to. Something that happens, and I guess it happens more than we know, is you have a celebration, whether that's your birthday or your anniversary or the birth of your child or the death of your parent. And something happens on that day that ruins that celebration for you. Like someone was telling me that on her sister's birthday, their father died. So that day for the sisters and brothers in the family is a mixed day. They want to celebrate their sister's birthday, but it's also a very sad day because their father died. And he didn't die like, you know, from a 10-year battle with cancer. It was a traumatic ending to his life. So the sister with the birthday probably feels like her birthday's ruined, and the rest of the family don't want her to feel like her birthday's ruined, but they also have all of these other feelings. So potentially she doesn't want to celebrate her birthday. I know someone else like this, a friend of theirs died on her birthday. So she doesn't even like to talk about her birthday. She definitely doesn't want you to have a birthday party for her. And, you know, I know some people who grew up in just horrible situations, suffered from neglect and abuse and deprivation, and there was a lot of rage. And people that grow up like this oftentimes find themselves in law enforcement or joining the military, where abuse, deprivation, and rage are part and parcel of what happens in the military. They're mean to you. They deprive you of sleep. They see what you're made of. If you show rage, they put you in the boxing ring. They want you to yell at your subordinates. Like the military reinforces these things that were traumatizing, and maybe that's why they're drawn to this. And this takes me to the current situation that's going on with ICE in our country. And the ICE workers, ICE officers who are not well trained. They're just regular people who answered the bell because of the signing bonus and the great salary. And they're out there on the streets trying to enforce immigration laws. You know, it's the old thing. They're trying to give from an empty cup. They've got, their cup is not full. They do not have any training in de-escalation. But they probably have plenty of rage, and they probably have plenty of abuse in their backgrounds, and probably plenty of anger towards the perceived enemy. And this is going on in our country, and some of our most prolific artists have written songs, kind of battle cries, and I want to play one of those right now. It's by my favorite, Bruce Springsteen. It's called The Streets of Minneapolis, and he wrote this in direct response to what happened in Minneapolis with ICE. And I think it's brilliant.
Through the winter's ice and cold, down Nicollet Avenue, a city of flame fought fire and ice neath an occupier's boots. King Trump's private army from the DHS, guns belted to their coats, came to Minneapolis to enforce the law, or so their story goes. Against smoke and rubber bullets in the dawn's early light, citizens stood for justice, their voices ringing through the night. And there were bloody footprints where mercy should have stood, and two dead left to die on snow-filled streets, Alex Pretty and Renee Good. Or Minneapolis, I hear your voice singing through the bloody mist. We'll take our stand for this land and the stranger in our midst. Here in our home they killed and roamed in the winter of 26. We'll remember the names of those who died on the streets of Minneapolis. Trump's federal thugs beat up on his face and his chest. Then we heard the gunshots and Alex Pretty lay in the snow dead. Their claim was self-defense, sir. Just don't believe your eyes. It's our blood and bones and these whistles and phones against Miller and Noam's dirty lies. Oh, I'm Minneapolis, I hear your voice crying through the bloody mist. We'll remember the names of those who died on the streets of Minneapolis. Trample on our rights. If your skin is black or brown, my friend, you can be questioned or deported on sight. In our chains of ice out now, our city's heart and soul persist. Through broken glass and bloody tears on the streets of Minneapolis. Of Minneapolis. We'll remember the names of those who died on the streets of
can't argue with the boss. He knows what's up. I have two more songs that I want to play, so I'm going to play those, and then we'll see what time we have left at the end to chat. The next one is World Change Me by Max McNown.
Monsters all fled from under my bed. Now they're downtown walking the streets. Idol in my hand, Bible in the nightstand. Where the devil lives in the black screen. It's easy to fold, to fall, to throw your hands up and join them all. Hard to be alive, hard to be alone. Hard to keep fighting in a world that ain't home. Trying to stay kind, trying to find hope. Lost children tell you how to act, grow. Drink up all the poison in your cup. The chains make you think you're free. Maybe I can change the ways of this world, but I won't let the world change me. money and sex, will of the flesh, tell a man they can do no harm. Pull him in close, let him think he's in control. That's how they put a hole in his heart. It's easy to fold, to fall, to throw your hands up and join them all. I wake up in a sweat to the devil and his friends, saying good luck getting through the dark. It's hard to be alive, hard to be alone, hard to keep fighting in a world that ain't home. Trying to stay kind, trying to find hope. All the lost children tell you how to act, grow. Drink up all the poison in your cup. Chains make you think you're free. Maybe I can change the ways of this world, but I won't let the world change me. I won't lay down. Not then, not here, not now. I'll stand my ground. Those feet ain't where I bow.
Okay, not sure why Level Up wanted to play, but okay. The last song is called Why. It's by John Bellion and Luke Combs. So let's play that one.
I'm scared to meet you, 'cause then I might know you. And once I know you, I might fall in love. And once I'm in love, then my heart is wide open for you to walk in, drop the bomb, blow it up. So why love anything, anything, anything at all? Why love? Stressed and strung out about things that could happen, and I can move mountains with the worry I've done. So I called my father and he started laughing. He said, you think it's bad now until you have a son. So I love anything, anything. At all. Oh, oh, oh. Why love
Okay, so those were three really good songs. I think in closing the show, well, first of all, I want to say that I'm back next week because this is the last week of the month and next week is the first week of the month. So, you know, I'm here on the odd months, which is one. So February 5th, I'll be back on the air. what's happening right now in our country seems almost unbelievable. And I fear that we're going to have a whole generation of people suffering from PTSD from what they've seen on the news, from what they've seen on social media, from what they've witnessed in real life if they live in Minneapolis or any other city where ICE has been forcefully taking people off the streets. I heard a number. I heard that we have deported 1 million people. And it got me thinking, do we think there's more than 1 million immigrants that are criminals in America? Like, why aren't they all gone? I mean, if you've already gotten a million of them, don't you think you can take a break? There's just no way there's that many criminals that still need to be deported. I think these singular events, Renee Good, Alex Preddy, I think those events replayed for us can cause some trauma. And there can be PTSD that can make us afraid of law enforcement, that can make us afraid of people of color, that can make us afraid of people from other countries. And I want to caution us to be cognizant of that and not let that happen. That's part of the indoctrination of this administration. And we don't need to fall for it. Our neighbors are not our enemies. This is not a cleansing. The immigration enforcement is to stop the stream of immigrants into our country. Apparently, they've already done that. We haven't had any people enter our country since our current president took over. So he did that job. He closed the borders. So what are we doing right now? How are there more than a million criminals illegally in our country? I find it to be impossible. But when you have bumblehead Kristi Noem and diabolical Stephen Miller in charge, spewing hatred on TV, on the airwaves, in the news, this is what you get. You get what you voted for. And we're in a moral crisis, and the time to speak out is now. So take a few words from Bruce Springsteen, and let's not stand for it any longer. Let's not be quiet. Let's not be part of the problem. Let's try to find a way to be part of the solution. Let your voices be heard. Don't be afraid to say, this is not okay. I do not believe in this. This is not what I voted for. This goes against my moral compass. Be brave. It's going to take bravery, and it's going to take bravery from a lot of us to change what's happening. So this has been Level Up with Danny. I'm your host, Danny Stockham. If you need help finding a place to deal with your PTSD trauma, feel free to reach out to me. I have lots of resources. And I'll be back, as I said, next week, February 5th, for another edition of Level Up with Danny. Thank you so much for joining me today. It was my privilege to be here with all of you. This is KOWS LP.